Thoughts and prayers are not going to cut it for this show. We are actually going to dig deep into guns and violence in our schools with a panel of experts. We're going to cover it all. Let's bust some pencils.
This is Busted Pencils Radio, fully leaded education talk with Dr. Tim Slecker. Here's what's trending in education news.
From thehill.com, ex-GOP lawmakers suggest left-wing groups are coaching Florida shooting survivors. Former Rep. Jack Kingston from Georgia suggested that survivors of last week's shooting at a high school in Florida are being coached on their activism by left-wing groups.
Why?
I don't understand why.
Why do we have to go here?
That was kind of my question, too.
Okay, if you're left-wing, right-wing, liberal, conservative, I want to ask this. Seriously, let's ask the question here.
Okay.
Why would we need to suggest that activism 5 days later on students' parts, having been part of a shooting in their school, mm-hmm. 17 of their classmates have been killed, that them speaking out in the news and different things like that, somebody has to say, well, they're obviously being coached and their movement has been hijacked.
And see, what I think the lawmakers here are taking for granted is that these kids all went through the same thing. They weren't looking at a car accident from, you know, all these different angles, right? They all went through the same thing and had the same experience. So they're telling the same story. So from the outside, it may look like, oh, they're being coached. They're all saying the same thing. They're saying the same thing because that was all their firsthand knowledge. And they were all there.
They were all there. And so it's everything's so damn political, right? And
yeah.
On this one, it's like, can we drop it mm-hmm. here? Even if, quote, coaching. So what does that mean? Did somebody say, hey, look, before you go out there, you're going to be on CNN. You're 17 years old.
Here are your first talking
time.
Points.
Here's some things you want to remember. Here's
right.
some things to say. You know, look at the camera. Do stuff like that. Okay, that's coaching, right?
That's true.
Is
yes.
that left-wing hijacking? Or is that just coaching someone who's just been through a trauma to
right.
actually be on television and how to do an interview?
Well, because they could consider coaching them from a parent.
Right.
Look, when you're talking to somebody about this, make sure you're acting this way or this way. Don't make it political. These are kids.
Yeah. And if it's political, maybe it is. And will other groups use the kids' voices to push certain political agendas, maybe not, but here to go, first of all, to go after the kids,
that's just
wrong. It's just not the right thing to do.
No.
You know, let's get over this. Let them talk. Let them have activism. And the idea, though, too, here behind this, which is what I think is funny, is that, well, we can't have 17-year-olds who really know how to get politically active on their own because they're only 17.
They don't know what they're doing.
They don't know what they're doing.
No.
Actually, I think that's why you come back and attack them, because that scares the hell out of legislators, whether you be a Democrat or a Republican. The fact that a new voting base may be active
right.
scares you.
From the Washington Post, I am not a crisis actor. Florida teens fire back at right-wing conspiracy theorists. In the aftermath of last week's school shooting in Parkland, Florida, some of the most powerful testimonies have come from the teenagers who survived the rampage. They've repeatedly detailed their harrowing experience to national news networks, many calling on for stricter gun control laws. They have also become a target of right-wing smears and innuendo. Some prominent figures in the right-wing media are suggesting that students are making it all up, or that the children are paid actors, or they're taking talking points that have been manufactured by public relations experts on the left.
Wow.
This is a huge conspiracy, apparently.
Right. So this JFK all over again.
Right. Exactly.
This is very similar to the story we just did.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, again, but this is even more.
This sounds, it's got
this
more
is,
like
this is,
bad
this
undertones.
This is just awful.
Yeah.
Right? The whole idea, and in fact, let's be honest, this happened in 2012 with Sandy Hook, when all those first graders and kindergartners mm-hmm. were shot. Right-wing conspiracy. This was made up, according to those people at the time. The whole shooting, the whole town, everything was staged, fake coffins. This wasn't real. And behind that reasoning was, this is what those who want your guns will do. to create such an anti-mass feeling against guns that they will go to these lengths to create this horrendous of a story so that the American population will turn on guns. All right, here we are now, after shooting, just happened, 17 yep. dead, same thing. They're actors.
Well, and what grabs me with this story is that all it takes are one or two of these people that have these grand theories, and they take it, and they're like, nope, never happened. Yeah. And all of a sudden, in their mind, it's real, and they think, you know, what they're saying is real. It's just ludicrous to me that in a world of knowledge that we have today, that this can still happen.
Somebody actually believes this. Now,
right.
I think what you have here, too, the people that put this out there, they're the ones who are most heinous because they absolutely know it's not true. They know they're feeding this, though, to a group of people out there who are going to take it and go, see, I told you the government's out to take my guns.
Yep.
And now they created another fake shooting.
Right.
You know, and so there actually was a Florida legislator that tweeted out about them being being fake actors. He got fired.
Right. Totally got fired.
Okay, so was his firing part of the conspiracy too,
right.
or did somebody go, yo, dude, we don't talk about this like this because it's a real shooting and they weren't paid actors.
And what I think people take for granted too is that these kids, I call them kids,
right.
They're in high school. They're young, but they are activists because maybe they saw their parents take a stand on things. They're not faking what they're doing. They're trying to make a difference. They're just doing it earlier than the rest of us did.
Well, there was a quote in there that you said you really liked about that.
There's a quote in here that says, I think it's very despicable to say that just because we're young, we can't make a difference. It's not right. And legislators should apologize for that. And that's it. I think that a lot of people just kind of disregard what kids are saying.
Time for Tim to rant. This is Someone Has to Say It.
This is Someone Has to Say It. However, sometimes someone else needs to say it. And today, we're going to go with John Pavlovitz at johnpavlovitz.com, the emotionally immature teenagers saving America's souls. Quote, these teenagers aren't emotionally mature enough to speak on the gun issue, end quote. This has been the gun-loving lobby's party line ever since the students around this country were catalyzed into activism following the deadly mass shooting in Parkland, Florida. Since that moment, the repeated assertion by GOP politicians, partisans, pundits, and NRA mouthpieces is that somehow these teenagers lack the maturity and intelligence to grasp the complexities of the issues, or to comprehend the subtleties at play, or to speak into the topic with any authority. Are we talking about the same emotionally immature teenagers who watched their best friends and beloved teachers slaughtered in a matter of hours, who spoke then with eloquence and clarity before the watching world? Do they mean the same emotionally immature young people who have coordinated school walkouts, social media awareness movements, local protests, and a coming national display of solidarity, March for Our Lives? Are they referring to the emotionally immature teenagers who stood up on stage at the CNN town hall under the glare of the lights and cameras and the eyes of millions without flinching? Do these folks mean the emotionally immature teenagers who have almost single-handedly stripped the NRA of dozens of corporate sponsors this week through an organized, complex social media campaign? Are they questioning the emotional maturity of the middle and high school students who planned and led thoughtful, impassioned memorial services for their fellow students throughout the country just a few days after the Parkland shooting? Any attempt to dismiss high school students for their alleged lack of maturity is fully laughable, coming from those supporting a president with a fifth grade vocabulary, an elementary school attention span, an infantile capacity for critical thinking, and a prehistoric understanding of the world. A president whose solution to help underpaid, under-resourced, overworked teachers is to put a gun in their hands and ask them to do what trained officers could not do in Parkland, what a full base of soldiers at Fort Hood couldn't do in 2009, what a small army of Secret Service men and women couldn't do for Ronald Reagan in 1981, bring down a bad guy with a gun in a moment of unthinkable chaos. Are these the emotionally mature grown-ups still trying to say with a straight face that the only answer to the proliferation of guns and our exponentially higher rate of mass murders using those guns is more guns? No, the problem is not that these young people aren't capable of comprehending the gravity of the situation. They've buried their friends and peers this week, and they've seen how commonplace these murders are. And here, they know the politicians have nothing to offer but their dusty thoughts and prayers. The problem isn't that these teenagers don't have the facts straight. They know the statistics and the death rates accurately. They know how much money the GOP leaders have received from the NRA. They call out Fox News and their allergic reaction to the truth. They dismantle every bit of fake news and every tweet lie brandished by gun lovers desperate to change the narrative. No, the problem is not really that these adults think these people aren't capable of speaking with authority or sustaining their attention. It's that these adults know they can, and they are rightly terrified. Busted Pencils, Fully Leaded Education Talk, Special Edition, Guns in Our Schools. We've got three great guests in studio today. They're all moms of public school children, but that's probably the most important issue that they have. But we have Jen Greenwald, teacher, Heather Dubois-Bornan, the director of Wisconsin Public Education Network, and Anna Moffitt, school board member, Madison School District. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So it's now a week since the Florida shooting. Hard topic, right? As a parent, too, also, we think about these things. We in Wisconsin are in one way no different than the nation. We're having a lot of discussions around this issue. What should be done? How do we solve it? Who's next? Where do we go? And I just thought I wanted to hear from you guys. You know, what do we think? Because nobody seems to be. I mean, one great thing is the students themselves are making their voices heard, and we need to again let them continue to keep talking. But I've yet to hear people, you know, talking about this in a way other than their beliefs and their opinions. And so, you know, what are you public education advocates, those of you deep involved in it, really have to think? And so here we are in Wisconsin, and our attorney general, in response to this, Brad Schimmel, says, arm teachers. That'll fix it. And who's first on taking on our attorney general or supporting our attorney general? Jen, you're a teacher. Should you be packing?
Oh God,
I can't even imagine how that would work. I teach second graders; they're 7 and 8 years old. And what am I? I mean, even if I just try to think rationally about the logistics of that. Obviously, I'm not going to have a gun on my body at all times. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess, what if I did? What am I going to say? Kids duck, and then there's going to be a shootout over their heads? I can't imagine what kind of training I could be provided that would prepare me to actually be level-headed in that situation and aim. And I just think about the accidents that could happen. And the other piece of it is, let's say I'm keeping it locked somewhere mm-hmm. in my room. Well, I don't even have a cabinet, so I don't know where it would be locked. And then I would have to track down my keys and unlock the cabinet. And it's ridiculous. I can't even.
Heather, what do you want your kids' teachers armed?
Absolutely not. In fact, it's so infuriating to me to even have to answer that question at a time like this, that I feel chasing after political solutions to really serious problems is a frustration that our students don't deserve and that our schools have really already moved on from. I mean, there's absolutely no evidence that arming even the most capable, qualified teachers mm-hmm. could or would stop gun violence in schools.
But it's a solution. It's somebody put forward a solution, Anna?
Well, you know, unfortunately, the folks that put forward the solution really know little to nothing about education and even the day-to-day going on in our classroom, which is why it's such an awful solution that only makes a bad problem that much worse.
Because you're a board member, though. I mean, this would come to you to say, you as a school board member, do you want to provide funding and the resources to arm the teachers that work in your school district?
I absolutely would not. And I would fight tooth and nail to prevent that from happening in our district. The answer to gun violence is less guns, not more.
Okay, so there's a, anybody want to jump in on Anna's comment there about gun control? Is this a gun control issue at a minimum, or is this a, as they say, a mental health issue?
I would totally agree with Anna on that question. It's not a matter of arming more people to make more students safer. It's a question of how do we make sure that access to firearms is limited and within the control of local communities. And so some kind of top-down measure from the Attorney General to put more guns in all schools across the state is not the sort of solution that local schools need. And it's not the solution that any schools are asking for.
Okay. So, arming teachers, I've got a panel of wonderful people that said, no, dumb idea. And I'm looking at Jen, the teacher specifically, who's like, really, you want me to carry a gun? I teach second graders. But think about that, right? That's the other part of this is like, I've heard a few teachers say, my job is to teach. You know, so where's my head now when I'm carrying a gun? And I'm teaching addition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, how do you make that shift, right? And so it's silly. Though solutions, people want solutions. So we're going after solutions here in Wisconsin. And another solution that's been put forward in Wisconsin is arming guards and putting them in every school to protect your children and my children. Anybody want to jump on that one first? Armed guards? Do we have the money?
Well, I would say right away that our comprehensive high schools already have armed officers called educational resource officers in each of the schools. So that's already being done. I think a great question that President Howard raised at a press conference that we held with Dane County Executive Joe Parisi and Representative Chris Taylor is how many will be enough? We have folks there. How many more do we need? I think the research shows that more officers, more armed guards do not prevent these acts, and it actually just leads to greater rates of incarceration for our students of color and our students with disabilities.
Hmm. Heather?
There were armed guards at the school in Florida. There were armed deputies outside the school who could not stop the shooter. Having an increased number of armed guards is not a solution that schools are asking for. We know what solutions our schools are asking for. They're asking for more resources to meet the immediate needs of the students in their classrooms right now. They're asking for mental health services. They're asking for more special education funding, which has been flat for a full decade in this mm-hmm. state. They're asking for the state legislature to lift a cap on safety spending that was actually cut from the state budget in 2011 and has not been restored. In fact, a measure to restore that additional funding was rejected by the Wisconsin State Legislature last week. And so the rejection of any solutions that would provide the material support for some of the things that are being proposed makes me think that our current legislature isn't all that serious about addressing safety needs in our school. And they're just, you know, playing political football right now with some buzzwords that seem to be getting a lot of traction, but will not lead to any more feelings of security for parents, educators, or students in this state. We need to do better.
So you're going more on a different side of the solutions. Jen, I want to give you a chance just to weigh in, though, on the armed guards in your school.
I want schools to be welcoming to families, community members, and children most of all. And my biggest concern with more people with weapons whose job it is to police the area is just what Anna said, that we're going to have little infractions. Kids are kids and they make mistakes. And some mistakes are bigger than others, but I worry that kids of color are going to be disproportionately punished for things, for mistakes that kids make. And if you have a police officer or whatever, that's, what does that lead to? Mm-hmm. That leads to real charges and serious consequences that are probably unfair.
You cannot change the Second Amendment. And I'm like, yes, you can. It's called an amendment. Like, if you can't change something, it's called an amendment. See, many of you need a thesaurus more than you need a constitution. And if you don't know what a thesaurus is, get a dictionary, work your way forward.
We are here with teacher Jen Greenwald, Wisconsin Public Education Network Director Heather Dubois-Bournain, and School Board Madison Anna Moffitt. We were talking about legislation, what the legislators are or aren't doing. One of the things, though, we keep hearing about are we should have better background checks. The Wisconsin legislature, though, seems to not necessarily think that we should do anything, that it's working just fine. And Heather's over there already making a disgusted-looking face, so I could describe that. So react.
This is the source of so much frustration for me, Tim, because in the past year, we have seen so much regressive legislation come out of our legislature. Last fall, there was a bill put forward to allow permitless concealed carry in our schools. That bill was co-sponsored by 50 legislators in the Wisconsin State House. It was opposed by 30 organizations, many related to public education advocacy, but lots of other groups as well. And it was supported by only 5, all of whom had ties to the gun lobby industry. Who are these people listening to? So last week, when the Assembly Democrats brought to the floor a proposal to call for universal background checks in response to the gun violence that we saw at a Florida school last week. Mm-hmm. That proposal was not only rejected by their colleagues on the Republican side, but it was replaced by a measure to call for more armed guards in schools. And there was a somewhat of a silver lining there, a bill that does have some bipartisan support, a proposal to call for stronger restrictions on straw purchasing a gun for someone who's unable to purchase one, him or herself, legally. That provision was also added. So now there's this kind of two-part bill out there, mm-hmm, that no one was really asking for, the armed guards in school side. And the question is, where's that going now? And so we see a lot of solutions that are being proposed kind of in a vacuum or outside of what education experts are asking for.
People are putting forward, so common sense gun regulation is the way we hear it. So
correct,
background checks. But in Wisconsin, Jen voted down, we don't want to do comprehensive background checks for gun registration.
I can't imagine why we're having that conversation. It just seems like a no-brainer. A gun is a weapon that can be used to kill someone, mm-hmm, or seriously injure someone. Shouldn't that be a minimum that we know who can have them?
Okay. Anna?
Yes.
Background check? I didn't do yours before you came into the show today, but...
Don't worry, I work for the district, so they do it already.
Okay, so you're already cleared. Good.
I'm good.
All right. But, why can't we pass a background check law? What's the problem?
I really don't understand what the problem is, especially when the majority of voters in Wisconsin agree that having background checks are a good idea and they support it. I think that's what's really mind-blowing to me. That where is this disconnect between the people of Wisconsin and the people who are holding elected office?
Well, but you have an elected office. You actually are a school board member. You're an elected official of the public. What would the school board do? What do you want to see done?
Well, what we're really looking for and what we hear our educators looking for are having public schools that are adequately resourced, having the staff that we need to support the students that come to our schools with a variety of needs, not just mental health needs, but other learning needs, physical needs. That's what the schools are asking for. And we're also asking for background checks, but in particular looking at background checks for people who have a record of domestic violence. If you look at the research, it clearly shows that many of the people who are engaging in gun violence do have a record of domestic violence.
Yeah, but I don't like that research.
Okay.
I mean, isn't that where the discussion breaks down now, though? Typically, I've been watching this. It's like, well, that's your research. I have my own research. I don't want to look at that research. I don't like that research. It doesn't make sense. You know, yeah, I agree, though. The research is there. But you made mention, though, Anna, about this issue, and you talked about this, like we could do better from the mental health. And mm-hmm. I think this is one that could have a little bit more depth to it, because I also get, and I think you were talking about this, because I worry about it being, quote, a mental health issue and not a gun issue.
Right. And I think, again, this is a way that Republican legislators and the NRA have tried to deflect from the real issue of common sense gun laws. And I know you don't like research, but I'm just going to say again.
Folks
with mental health differences actually tend to be victims more often than perpetrators. And when we look at the shootings that have surfaced across the country, rather than seeing mental health all the time as the underlying issue, the real underlying issue is a lack of connectedness for these individuals to their schools and the community. Mm-hmm. And so I think as a school board member, what I'm looking for are resources so that we can ensure that every student feels like they are part of our learning community, they're valued, they're learning, they're successful.
But I mean, there is something when we talk about, a mental health issue, right? And I think the way you said it, it distracts, right? Because we don't want to talk about gun legislation. Heather?
Yeah, I think Anna really hit the nail on the head there. When we pathologize students and imply in this conversation that we've got some bad actors in our school who are, you know, ticking time bombs or whatever kind of terminology we want to use, we're ignoring a larger problem, which is that we aren't meeting a lot of the social and emotional learning needs of our students because so many of our schools are under-resourced. So how do we get to every student? How do we make sure that they're is a sense of belonging and a sense of school community in every single public school building? And how do we meet our obligation to students and their families and to our communities to make sure that that happens? None of the solutions that are on the table right now are really addressing those root problems. And that's what I hear educators and parents and school board members and superintendents around the state begging for, is those basic solutions. The state needs to meet its obligation to our kids.
Well, let's go to the teacher then, Jen. You're with second graders. I mean, is this a mental health issue with second graders? And you just need more help identifying the mentally ill children in front of you so that we can pull them out and remove them?
This is where I feel like what I want in schools really has little to do with guns.
Okay.
I want every child in my school, in my classroom, that's what I can control, but I want every child to feel that they have a say over what they're learning, that they are, I want them engaged. I want them to love coming to school. And I want them to feel happy and safe walking through the halls because they know that the adults around them care for them and that they know that their peers in school care for them. I want school to be a joyful place for every single child that walks in the school.
So part of that is it's not necessarily that. I mean, is this connected in the sense where Heather was going, Anna, the resources of the local classroom teacher or the regular classroom teacher, which
I think,
and you're not regular. Absolutely awesome. So I don't want to label you that, but you know, do you have the resources you need to really make the difference you want to make?
Well, no. I think every teacher feels overworked and torn in too many directions we have too much thrown at us all the time, and the training doesn't necessarily match what our goals are. I think there isn't a teacher I've met who doesn't have kids' best interest at heart. And we have a lot of areas where we could grow.
Mm-hmm.
We can't do that unless we really invest real time and resources in figuring out how to do that.
Let's dig a little bit deeper with our guests on mental health, because I think we still need to parse that one out a little bit. We are here with three wonderful parents, also public school advocates. We have a teacher. We have the director of the Wisconsin Public Education Network. We have a school board member, Anna, Heather, Jen. Thanks for coming back with me. We were talking about this broader issue of mental health, and I know, Anna, you wanted to jump in and add a little bit more because, again, we do this typically, and I say we, and I'm not real media. I'm just somebody who plays somebody in media. But we create binaries so it's a mental health issue or it's a gun issue. But you had more on that.
Right. Well, like I said at the onset, I definitely believe it's a gun issue, first and foremost. And so any action needs to address that, first and foremost. In regard to mental health, being a parent and an advocate for children and youth with mental health needs, I am tremendously disappointed by rhetoric around mental health being the underlying cause for gun violence, because it stigmatizes the many individuals in our community that have mental health needs. And what I would say is, for folks that think putting more armed guards and putting more guns in our schools and turning our schools into little lockdown places and running code red drills really has a significant and negative impact on children's social emotional well-being and psychological well-being. Mm-hmm. And it's particularly traumatic for kids that have a prior trauma history. And we know more and more kids are coming to our public schools with significant trauma backgrounds. And so as we look to these reactive measures that are being suggested, we also need to be really looking at what are the negative or harmful impact from those reactive measures versus really focusing on the proactive measures that we could be putting in place.
Yeah, I read a piece, and it was in Psychology Today, and it was like, look, this is not a mental illness issue, and they didn't then go into gun, but really explained the fact that mental illness, and I think Heather, you cited, or maybe it was Anna who might have cited it earlier, that mentally ill, who are, 20% or not more of the population amongst us, our family, our friends, are, quote, mentally ill, whether it be depression, whether it be bipolar, whether it be anxiety, this idea. And so it's not a mental illness. These are not people running around creating mass shootings. In fact, these are people, they're our friends or our family members who are getting treatment, and most of them are doing quite well, and those that aren't are actually more likely to be the victim of violence than to be a violence perpetrator. So, so thanks for putting that straight, because mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things in this, when people do it's a mental health issue. It's like, you're not just doing damage by belittling the conversation by making it an either or, but you're really harming the issue of how we have to deal with mental health and the fact that there are people out there right now. So you've re-stigmatized mental health, which already has been a problem that's out there. And Heather, you have some thoughts on that, I think.
I couldn't agree more, Tim. I mean, when we criminalize students, when we stigmatize mental illness in our schools, we are distracting ourselves from our ultimate goal, which is creating learning environments where every single kid has an opportunity to thrive. I mean, the beautiful thing about public schools and why we all choose to dedicate so much of our time and energy and send our children to public schools is that they accept all. They embrace all. It's a space where the entire community, every kind of learner, people of all backgrounds, of
all walks of life can come together and our children can benefit from that in every way. When we start parceling out segments of that student population as problematic, then we can't meet our larger goals. And so a lot of these so-called solutions are really getting in the way of great gains that have been made in social emotional learning opportunities for kids in our schools. And we're just asking for common sense solutions. Mm-hmm. That's it. You know, I mean, it's simple. Shouldn't be so easy for an 18-year-old kid to go get an assault weapon of the sort that was used to massacre students in Florida last week.
So we're back. I mean,
It's that simple.
Yeah, we're back at it and going, look, common sense, gun laws, right? Let's get at this. Okay, first of all, the mental health issue is a distraction. And let's go after the fact that we can do some things such as common sense gun laws. And so we are talking about whether an 18-year-old should be able to freely buy an assault weapon. When I was listening to somebody else talk about this, saying, well, you know, that infringes on my freedom when I have to register and have do a background check and I have to get a license to hold this. And it's like, but Jen, I saw you driving a vehicle here today, right? And you have a license for that.
I do.
And you had to get that license.
Mm-hmm.
Well, did that infringe on your freedom?
No, it didn't. I just... It's the whole, I think, I don't know, again, I can't remember if Anna or Heather said this. I don't know why we're having this conversation. It really seems simple to me. A gun is a lethal weapon. There should be a minimum age to have one, just like there's a minimum drinking age and a minimum driving age and a minimum voting age. Mm-hmm. And there should be some steps you have to take to have one. I also think we have too many guns. I can't remember what I was reading the other day about, you know, other countries where they have fewer guns don't have this problem.
Mm-hmm.
How can we get rid of guns? I don't have the answer, but it just, these things seem, not everything is simple to me, but some of these things seem really simple.
Anna?
Yes.
Simplicity? Are you a supporter?
A supporter of getting rid of guns and getting them off the streets?
Well, so as we're coming in here, though, this is where I'm going to give you guys each this kind of last thing to say. And so we've been talking about common sense gun laws as the first step, and the fact that in the state of Wisconsin, the reality is that we'd rather talk about arming teachers and actually defeating any common sense gun laws. What do you have to say? In fact, let's do it this way. Your time. Talk to the legislator right now who's listening to Busted Pencils. What do you want to see a legislator or the legislature do?
What I would like to see our legislators do is to pass comprehensive gun reform laws. I think we need to ban assault weapons. I think we need to have background checks in place. We need minimum age requirements. We need to get rid of bump stock. I forget.
Right. The bump stock that essentially makes those guns almost an automatic machine gun.
Yes. And we also have to eliminate the straw. Heather alluded to it.
Yeah. Straw purchasing.
That's what I would tell them. If they do those things, I will happily join them and start talking about putting more armed guards in our school and security, as well as more supports for mental health.
Heather? You get to talk to the legislator, because every legislator in Wisconsin listens to Busted Pencils.
Listen, that's the key, Tim.
Okay.
I want our legislators to start listening to the people who are speaking up in droves, to the 97% of Americans who say, we want background checks, universal background checks on every situation, even buying guns in gun shows, which you can do in Wisconsin without a background check. We want them to listen to people at the Wisconsin anti-violence effort, WAVE, Moms Demand Action Wisconsin. We want them to listen to the people connected through the Wisconsin Public Education Network and at the local level who are supporting their public schools and speaking out and saying, listen to these kids. Listen to our students. Listen to the educators. They know what they're talking about. Take them seriously and let the expertise of people who understand what solutions our children need to succeed drive the decisions that will actually allow them opportunities to do so. It's simple. Listen to the people.
Oh, Jen, you got to follow that one.
No, that's really hard. I'm going to say I agree with what both Anna and Heather said, so I'm not going to repeat it. If I get time with the legislators, I'm going to say pass common sense gun laws, and then figure out a way to actually help me teach. Stop getting in my way. Stop bashing schools. Stop bashing teachers. Stop trying to privatize us. We are public. We are a public institution, which means we're for everybody. So stop getting in our way.
Yes.
Well, we will come back on that issue because I think that's where we really want to go. Because if you're going to do your jobs, if we're going to protect our public schools, the first thing we need to do is admit that we're not doing a very good job of taking care of teachers and the kids that are already in them. But yet, for some reason now, when a gun issue comes up, we're all of a sudden going to find all kinds of money to, quote, arm and train teachers, but yet we still can't buy you chalk. Okay? So, Jen, Heather, Anna, thank you for busting pencils with me today on this topic. You guys rocked it. So
thanks for having us, Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you.
From Milwaukee Teachers Education Association, teaching all children.
Gay Adelman, founder of A Few Good Women Kentucky, was with us last week and discussed at length how they're going to take on politicians who are not helping education, literally taking them on by running against them and beating them in elections. You can download that podcast at Google Play or iTunes or our website, BustedPencils.com. Here's her take on that famous Alfie Cohn question. Gay, what are the schools our children deserve?
Wow, Tim, that is a difficult question, but I will try to answer that. I believe that our students deserve schools that have equitable access to instruction, quality instruction, as well as resources. I believe our students need schools that make sure their fundamental needs have been met before we worry about ramping up test scores and accountability measures. I think our schools deserve teachers and staff members who are appreciated and not demoralized. I believe we need schools that are able to work collaboratively instead of competing with each other across districts for scores that don't even reflect the population of the students that attend those schools. And I just want to see funding restored. I want to see the community get behind their schools again. Instead of this manufactured crisis that we're living, I would like for us to fully embrace and support and engage with our public schools again.
Every week at this time, we read a quote from legendary activist and historian Howard Zinn. For this special show, though, I've decided to read a quote I feel is in the spirit of Howard Zinn. This is your moment of Zinn, in the words of David Bowie. And these children that you spit on, as they try to change their worlds, they're immune to your consultations. They're quite aware of what they're going through. My thanks to Gay Adelman, Jen Greenwald, Heather Dubois-Bornan, Anna Moffitt, and you. I'm Dr. Tim Slecker. Thanks for busting pencils.
Log on to BustedPencils.com for the latest trending news, blogs, past shows, and more. Subscribe to our podcast in iTunes and Google Play. And get daily updates by following us on Facebook and Twitter at Busted Pencils. This is Fully Leaded Education Talk. Busted Pencils Radio.